You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Let me just turn that down a little bit. Ki te waia mā runga irirangi pōho mō tēnei rā, te rā o whā o pōtu te rangi. Kia ora, you're listening to the Thursday Wire on 95 BFM for today, the 4th of March. I'm Ayana, I've got no Justin today, I'm alone in the studio for my first ever Wire, but I'm pretty pumped. I've got an hour of news and current affairs, so you can dig a little bit deeper into what's going on at the moment. E whai ake nei on the show today. We have Health Minister Andrew Little talking about Farm Act review and also deaf awareness. Then I've got the Chief Executive for the National Foundation for Deaf and Hard of Hearing, Natasha Gallardo. Then Karanama has done a report on New Zealand's ageing population. And then our regular segment, Neighbourhood Watch, Zoe Canandis from Radio Adelaide. It's pretty nuts in Aussie at the moment, so we're going to hear from her all about that. E haha o whakaro, you can get in touch with me throughout the show. Tuku pātui mai, you can text me on 5395 or why am I rane, give me a call on 309-3879. You can also catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95 BFM website. I tēnei wā tonu, let's get into it.
Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labour MP Andrew Little.
Yes, this week with the Health Minister Andrew Little, I asked him about the Farm Act review and why the budget wasn't being included, also inequity in medicine access for Māori and Pacifica, and about the report that he helped launch yesterday about how hearing loss is increasing and how we can prevent it. If you want to know what tunes the Minister cranks while he's ironing his shirts for Parliament, well, you're about to know. I started off by asking Minister Little about what the review is all about.
It's a review of the way Farmac makes its decisions. Look, Farmac is the creature of an act of Parliament. We want to know that whether or not Farmac is fulfilling the objectives that the statute sets for it. And then we want to know whether the objectives that are in the statute are actually relevant to today. We know that there are problems with Farmac and claims that, you know, they're not keeping up with modern medical technologies, new medicines that are available for different conditions and stuff. We want to know that it's being as agile as it possibly can. So it's just looking at what it does, the way it does it, and whether or not it's, you know, meeting the needs that we expect of a pharmaceutical buying agency in New Zealand.
Yeah, so one of the big criticisms of the review is that it isn't analysing their budget and how Pharmac allocate funding for different drugs. Why is this not part of the review?
Well, it will be looking at the way Pharmac allocates funding for different drugs. What the review panel is not looking at is what the budget should be, simply because we could spend hundreds of millions of dollars more. We already spend just over $1 billion a year on medicines for New Zealanders. We could spend hundreds of millions of dollars more and we still would not meet the demands that are placed on our pharmaceutical procurement. In the end, the budget is a political decision. The money that gets allocated to Pharmac is weighed up against other money that goes to the rest of the health system. What goes into the total health system is weighed up against what goes into other sort of spending that the government does. Schools, welfare services, roads, you know, all the sort of full gamut. So that's not something that a review panel can, you know, there's no technical scientific answer about how much should be spent. It comes down to a political question, and so it's not right for a review panel to be looking at that.
But surely if there are holes in the budget, the quickest thing to do would to be just to include it in this review now and see how they're exactly spending the money.
Holes in the budget is an interesting turn of phrase. The reality is we don't buy absolutely every drug that everybody wants. We can't afford it. We can't afford absolutely every medical treatment that everybody wants. So we spend $20 billion a year on health. It's about one-fifth of the government's budget, and of that, about $1 billion goes into medicines. Is there unmet demand? Yes, there is. We cannot do absolutely everything that everybody wants. because there is a limit. So, the budget that FAMAC has is a product of the budget setting process that politicians and cabinet, and you might say arguably parliament does. Really, cabinet sets the budget. There is no technical review you can take of the way a cabinet should set the budget, because it might be right that right now $1 in every $5 that the government spends will be on health. In 10 years' time, it might be more than that, or it might be less than that. And so that's not something that is apt to kind of technical review.
So Māori and Pacifica, they don't access medicines at the same rate, despite having more health issues. Right now, prior to the review, what's being done to address this?
There's a lot of things being done in terms of the general kind of health review or health reform process. One of the critical objectives of all of that is to significantly improve our performance in equity terms. In relation to PharmAc and the PharmAc review in medicines, the panel is made up of the six of them. Two whakapapa to Vera Siwi and have a Māori health academic background. There's another Tristan Mingham is a Māori health, or he's a health academic on Māori health issues, although he's not Māori himself. And we specifically wanted to make sure that those equity questions were answered in the review as well, to make sure that the way PharmAc makes decisions is taking into account the fact that there is a pretty uneven distribution of the way medicines are kind of played out at the moment.
And where do you expect the review to highlight the areas of change that are needed?
Well, that's really a matter for the review. We know on the equity question there is an inequity, and part of that will be about who are the voices in the debate. There are a lot of voices who want, you know, very specific drugs for very specific conditions. We actually don't hear a lot of the Kaupapa Māori Health Service kind of voice a lot in the pharmaceutical buying debate. I'm confident we will now have that voice, and that will determine, you know, what the review panel comes up with when it comes to better equity and access to medicines.
And moving on to another topic, yesterday you helped launch the first ever World Hearing Report, which was on World Hearing Day. What were your biggest takeaways from that?
I think the significance of the problem around the world. So they're saying that if you look at all the various ear and hearing health conditions, they are estimating that by about 2035, I think, 1.1 billion people around the world will be needing assistance with hearing and ear conditions. We know that, you know, the way people listen to music now and some of the activities that people do, young people in particular, has an impact on hearing, and there's a sort of expected surge of hearing conditions to come through over the next sort of 15 to 20 years. So I think the message really was, get prepared. There are things happening in our environment at the moment that is going to have an impact on hearing, and we need to be ready for it, making sure we're doing, you know, good baseline testing, but we are also making sure that the health interventions and the supports are there so that people can continue to enjoy the benefit of that sense.
Perhaps ironically listening to the radio right now.
I think that's one of the more soothing things you can do for your ears.
Listen to 95 BFM.
It's when you turn the volume up. Exactly. Very therapeutic. Yeah, it's when you turn the music up loud. It's actually when you have headphones and earphones and you got your music up loud, that's when the, you know, problems can arise.
Yeah, so the National Foundation for Deaf and Hard of Hearing are lobbying the government to partner in a public health program to combat this. Where is the government at with that?
I can't tell you, to be honest. I wasn't aware of that until you said it just now. So I will go and talk to my Ministry of Health officials and ask what approaches have been made. But it seems to me a very worthwhile thing to be doing. You don't want to stop people enjoying what they're doing. I'm a big fan of, you know, usually when I'm doing the ironing, I put my earphones in and listen to my music. But you want people to be able to do it in a way that's not going to put their hearing at risk.
What music do you listen to, Minister?
Funny enough, I share my Spotify account with my son, so he's 20 years old. So I, by default, end up sort of just putting what he listened to last. And, sometimes I enjoy it.
Yeah,
sometimes I go back to my... sometimes I go back to my old favourites of my generation, so Rolling Stones and things like that.
That was Health Minister Andrew Little on the Pharmac Review, hearing loss and what tunes he jams while he's ironing.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire.
If you want to get in touch, you can. Just let me know what you think. Or, you know, we're at level 3, so you might want to just get in touch anyway for some social connection. I might need it. Tuku pātuhi mai. You can text in on 5395 or YMI 3093879. It is 13 minutes past midday at the moment, and we're going to crack on into the next story. The first ever World Hearing Report was released yesterday, and hearing loss is increasing dramatically around the world. It's pretty freaky, and it's really hard living with hearing loss. And we can expect almost a million people to be living with hearing loss in New Zealand by 2050. So I spoke with Chief Executive of the National Foundation for Deaf and Hard of Hearing, Natasha Gallardo. I started off by asking Natasha what the report was all about.
That was the first ever world report on hearing commissioned by the World Health Organization. And essentially, the report is acknowledging that the increase in hearing loss globally is something that can no longer be ignored, with 1 in 5 people having hearing loss globally.
And it mentions that a lot of hearing loss is due to preventable measures. And what are some preventative actions that our listeners can take to help prevent this?
Yes, that's correct. A lot of hearing loss is preventable, especially in young people. About 60% of hearing loss is preventable in young people. And that relates to noise exposure, so listening to devices at loud volumes for prolonged periods of time, seeking help for medical infections or ear infections at the right time, immunisation, and other medical situations that can be prevented.
It seems pretty crazy, 1.5 times more hearing loss in our population by the time 2050 comes around. What do you think has led to the increase in this?
Well, we've certainly seen an increase of around 30% in youth hearing loss since the 1990s. That was an age demographic that we hadn't previously seen or really associated hearing loss with before. And we know that that is due to mainly to noise exposure from personal devices in the way that we live now. And also just the lifestyle that we lead is really a noisy one. And so we are seeing more hearing loss from noise exposure across the board.
Yeah, what you're suggesting, a lot of it brings people heaps of enjoyment, but how challenging is it to change behaviour when it challenges people's enjoyment and leisure time?
That's a very interesting question. Part of our initiative here at National Foundation for Deaf and Hard of Hearing is that education piece. And it's not saying to young people in particular, you can't listen to your music or personal devices. What we want to say or share with them is how to do it in a safe way that protects your hearing. So you have a sound allowance that you can safely use up in a week. And we want to ensure that we get that message out to young people about what that sound allowance is and how to safely listen to their personal devices. And, for example, not at maximum volume for prolonged periods of time and that sort of thing. So it's more about education on continue to do what you do, but do it in a safe manner.
Yeah, I've been to a few gigs recently and I swear they're getting louder and louder.
Yes, well, that's another issue is when you attend concerts, and I'm sure probably like yourself, you walk away and you have that ringing in your ear, mm-hmm. And that is what is called tinnitus, and a lot of people would have that after a loud event, and what happens though is that prolonged exposure to noise can lead to longer term effects from tinnitus, so that can stick with you, and that's a precursor to potential hearing loss issues in the future. And so that's the type of education and messages that we want to get out there is to, if you do attend a concert, hey, pop some earplugs in just to give your ears that extra layer of protection. You'll still hear the music and enjoy it, but it will help to protect your ears.
So you're lobbying the government at the moment to partner in a public health program around all this. How's that going?
Very well. Look, we've had some very positive discussions with Minister for Health and also with Minister for Disability Issues, and they are keen to work collaboratively together on a public health program, and we'll be continuing those discussions.
So I spoke to the health minister earlier this morning and I brought that up, and he, I don't know if I caught him off guard, but he didn't seem to know anything about that.
Literally, we've had one discussion with him, which was on last week on Friday, and then yesterday was the official launch of our public health intention to the government. So and Minister Little joined us on at that event, and at that event he did say that he was supportive of the sector's collaboration with the government on a public health program. We haven't defined what that public health program looks like as yet. We've just had those early discussions.
Yeah, fair enough. And so what are some of the key messages that you would hope to get out in that public health program? What would it aim to do?
We need to approach this from a sector perspective. So it's a long-term program, and the four key elements of the public health program will be around accessibility, ensuring that we have reducing any inequality to accessing services and technology and communication needs that people require. Early identification and prevention, that is key, and also looking at how we could potentially introduce screening, hearing screening at various age points. Prevention and education, so addressing preventable hearing loss, much to what I had just mentioned before. How do we educate young people to safely listen to music to prevent that hearing loss in the future? And a big part of it is public awareness. We're really keen to reduce and the stigma associated with hearing loss and have the public have a greater awareness of the challenges that deaf and hard of hearing people face, but also what they can do to protect their hearing in the future too.
You guys work with people with hearing loss a lot, and you yourself were diagnosed with hearing loss as a teenager. You don't always know how shit it is until it happens to you and you have to live with it, as with everything. But I'm curious as to some consequences of living with hearing loss.
Look, there's many. people with hearing loss do have feelings of isolation and anxiety, and that's really been amplified with COVID-19, particularly with mask wearing. People don't realise that people with hearing loss, including myself, rely heavily on those visual cues of lip reading and facial expressions. So we've found mask wearing, even though we know it's an important part of protection, it's created even more challenges for us, and just emphasise that feeling of isolation and those feelings of anxiety and mental health issues as well.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. I support someone at the moment with hearing loss, and I know it always gets tangled in his hearing aids, but I didn't think of the lip reading part of it.
Yeah, it's a big one. I mean, most deaf and hard of hearing people will rely on those visual cues. It helps to put the whole conversation together. And without it, it's just, and also the masks, muffle sounds as well. So then it just makes it even more difficult. Add in the social distancing, go into a supermarket with a Perspex barrier, and you've pretty much got no hope of hearing what is going on behind the barrier.
So
I can speak from experience, trust me.
That was Chief Executive of the National Foundation for Deaf and Hard of Hearing, Natasha Gallardo. It's 21 minutes past 12 right now. You're listening to the Thursday Wire with Ayana on 95 BFM. And our population is getting older. Humans are living for longer, and there are consequences of that. You're going to find out what they are after this.
What's his title? Guy in charge, Dr. Ashley Broom.
The Director General of Health.
Yeah.
The Wire.
You guys got anything to eat?
Holy crap!
The lucky taco truck just crashed through the flipping wall. Okay. There goes the bond.
Anyone for tacos?
Couldn't we just order online?
I mean, yeah, you could. But the atmosphere, man.
The Lucky Taco Fiesta Kit. Everything you need to make authentic, delicious tacos at your place. Get them from Faro Fresh or order online at theluckytaco.co.nz for free delivery anywhere Auckland-wide. The Lucky Taco, bringing Mexican street food to your place since way back.
Well, my name is Chris, and I'm here to say, looking for a flatmate in the Linnet's Grey. You gotta be cool, and you gotta be tough. You gotta be vegan, and no pets or smokers.
Room in Freeman's Bay Cottage. Me, urban sophisticated wine expert, French cinema aficionado. You, educated, tidy, silent.
Room in flat, Mount Eden. Text Dave.
Whoever or wherever you're after, the 95BFM Accommodation Guide is here for you. Email your listing to accommodationguide@95bfm.com. The 95BFM Accommodation Guide, every Thursday on drive and online at 95bfm.com.
Like, naked is the theme. Like, people just love getting naked.
Yes, we are back on The Wire, and I just want to remind you that you can get in touch. You can text in on 5395 or call in 309-3879. It is 23 minutes past 12 right now, and I have a piece from Karanama, who has produced a report on the ageing population because there are issues with everyone living longer, and he's going to look at what those issues are and the potential solutions.
Growing old. Thanks to many factors that have improved over time here in New Zealand, it's something that we are all able to do a lot easier. Gone are the days where a scratch on your arm or a cut on your knee would take your life at the sweet, sweet age of 25. Rather, thanks to advancements in modern medicine and healthier lifestyles, we are in prime conditions now to live older and healthier lives. This, however, creates an issue for the future, not just here, but internationally in economically developed countries as well.
When I was growing up, not so much you, Alex, but we used to nudge each other when we saw someone who was 90, oh, he's 90, because there were so few of them. Now they're everywhere.
Thanks to the detail for that clip. For those who are relatively new to this topic, the aging population issue isn't just a case about people growing older. Rather, it's the increasingly higher rate of people doing so and a higher life expectancy. Today, I thought I'd look into New Zealand's ageing population, how much it's increasing, the problems that this causes, and potential solutions to a situation that's impacting much of the developed world.
Hey, you!
Top of the morning, oldster!
Hey, I saw you on TV last night!
New brand flakes, bold new taste. Brand flakes.
According to statistics from the Ministry of Health, New Zealand's population is getting older. People over the age of 65 currently constitute around 15% of our population and is expected to double over the next 20 years. Internationally, Japan has one of the largest aging populations in the world, with 28.7% of their people being aged 65 or older. In Germany, 28% of their population is over 65 and is expected to rise to 37.6% by 2050. It is clear that this is a trend that is happening worldwide. There are issues binded with an aging population. With nations getting older, there is obviously an increased demand for specific services. According to figures from the Ministry of Health, over 50% of people aged 75 and older experience issues such as arthritis and other chronic pain and disabilities. There are disparities with an aging populace too. Māori and Pacifica and Asian populations are still quite young, with life expectancy still being quite shorter. Information from the Ministry of Health shows that factors such as disproportionately negative health outcomes are a large factor. However, these groups are too starting to live longer. With the population getting older, an increased demand in healthcare and disability services is essential. A report conducted by RNZ also discusses adjustments needed to be made to everyday life to accommodate an increase in our elders that need to be looked after.
before the 2020, we have about 83,000 people over age 85. By the time we get to 2055 or 2060, there'll be 383,000 people aged 85.
Wow. So can you just repeat those numbers for me? So 83,000
yeah. Now, 383,000 roughly. Wow. And so those are the estimates. So it's, you know, don't have to be a mathematician to see what a large change. It's a fourfold increase in those. The diversity of our ageing population goes up even more. If you look at the proportional increase in older Maori and older Asian and older Pacific populations, it goes up by more than double that. And that's because that those populations are rapidly ageing, becoming successful. It's a really wonderful thing to celebrate, but actually do we know how to provide support and care for those populations, and do we understand the cultural contexts in which they operate?
Big thanks to RNZ for that clip. Where this also becomes an issue is in our economy. When people at working age and contributing to the economy are outnumbered by people in retirement, not working and requiring financial government assistance through superannuation. An academic report conducted for the Ministry of Health states that the median age of the New Zealand workforce is currently around 35 years old. Which means that around or even over half of our workforce is over 35 years old. By 2051, that median age is expected to rise to 46. This shows a clear increase in the growing age of Aotearoa's population, and is concerning when over half of our workforce in the next few decades will be over the age of 50, and may call for a reliance on young migrant workers. As the years go on, there is the worry that non-workers will outnumber workers and could threaten the economy. Although growing old is something that should definitely be celebrated, solutions need to happen in order to accommodate this growing change. There are numerous solutions that have been suggested to help accommodate this growing issue. One that's been raised here is raising the age that you are eligible for the pension from 65 to 67. Increasing the range of people that we have in the workforce. Of course, this has been very unpopular for older workers for obvious reasons. While raising the retirement age would be a more economically viable option, Retirement Commissioner Peter Kortz says that a large number of our elders leading up to retirement age now and in the future are much worse off financially than previous generations due to factors such as declining rates of home ownership among older people, and changes in employment, which means that raising the retirement age would do more harm than good. As it currently stands, National are committed to raising the retirement age for its long-term sustainability, whereas Labour want to continue funding to make sure superannuation is sustainable at its current age. New Zealand's population is getting older and it is only increasing. Therefore, it's important that solutions are suggested and implemented to ensure that not only do our current and future elders feel accommodated and cared for, but our economy keeps moving too in a sustainable way with workers so support can be arranged for some of New Zealand's most vulnerable people. My name is Karanama and you are listening to The Wire.
Thank you, Karanama, for that report.
And I wish some of your dozy mates in the media had got a fix on their job and started being reporters and journalists, not editorialists and analysts, which they're not qualified to do. Prison company accepted, of course.
The Wire.
This is the Thursday Wire with Ayana. And do you know what's going on in Australia at the moment? Because honestly, it's heaps of craziness. I've got Neighbourhood Watch after this song by The Horrors. It's Still Life on 95BFM.
We'll be right back.
8,000 or 10,000.
Shit.
The Wire.
This is the Thursday Wire with Ayana, and that was The Horrors with Still Life. It is 36 minutes past 12 after midday on a Thursday. Great time for it. And you're listening to 95BFM's Thursday Wire. So, yeah, it's my first ever Wire today. He aha or Fakaro. What are your thoughts? It's a pretty great time for it. In level 3 for your first show with no producers in the studio. If you want to get in touch, you can. You can text me on 5395 or also YMI. Call me on 309-3879. Really interested in your thoughts, and it's been a really, really interesting show so far. So I'm going to crack into the next segment, which happens every week. It is called Neighbourhood Watch.
You call that a news update? This is a news update. It's Neighbourhood Watch.
So this week on Neighbourhood Watch, Attorney General Christian Porter came forward yesterday as the Cabinet Minister who had rape allegations come to light about him last week. He has denied these allegations and has said he is not stepping down. There were insufficient admissible evidence and the case is now closed. I started off by asking Zoe Canandis from Radio Adelaide how this story is sitting in Australia right now. And just a content warning, this story does contain references to rape.
It feels like it's sitting quite wrong. There's so many elements to this story and this situation, and there's a lot of anger and confusion around what happened yesterday and what we've seen come to light in the past week regarding these allegations. Attorney General Christian Porter has completely denied all these allegations in a press conference yesterday in Sydney, in Perth. We didn't really know. We knew the day before that the Cabinet Minister who was behind these allegations were going to out themselves, and we didn't know who exactly it was, and then we heard the news that Christian Porter was holding a press conference in Perth about an hour or so before he did, and then we found out that it was him. There has been some criticism on his part and others' parts that social media did out him before this press conference. It was a strange thing to do in this press conference, is attack the media and social media when you are trying to deny rape allegations. So essentially a bit of backstory is last Wednesday we found out that these allegations had been sent to the Prime Minister and to female MPs anonymously, and they had come to light. It was a police report in 2019. Then Christian Porter has now come forward, and that's sort of where we're at the moment.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy time in Australia at the moment. Some people are calling it the Australian Me Too movement, but I do remember in 2018 when apparently there was a Me Too movement in Australian politics as well, but here we are again.
Yeah, it feels permanent within the halls of power in Australia. Unfortunately, it feels like the never-ending story. So we had about a month ago a younger junior staffer, which I've spoken on this segment about before. Her name is Brittany Higgins, and she's come forward with her story of being raped in Parliament House as a junior staffer in 2019. So that has all been happening the past few weeks as well. And then now we have this. It feels terrifying to know that these sort of things are happening in power. And it definitely is this Me Too movement happening. But as you mentioned, it feels like it's happening again, and I just personally don't know how many more times this needs to happen before we can see some actual change.
And what do you think actual change will look like? I have heard that Scott Morrison is losing popularity for the way that he has dealt with this, but does that seem
So, I mean, Christian Porter, there hopes to be an inquiry into this besides the police inquiry that I believe has now closed in terms of the allegations that this woman has sent to the police. So but hopefully there will be an individual inquiry in Parliament about this case. But what does real change look like? I'm not really sure. I think you maybe hit the nail on the head. There certainly needs to be some new leadership and new voices that can actually make a change, because the government's handling of all of these situations have been quite appalling. For example, Scott Morrison very clumsily mentioned that he was able to feel sympathy for Brittany Higgins once he was able to imagine her as one of his daughters, which is a statement that I think should be held against him for a very long time, because, women don't need to be daughters or mothers or sisters in order to be human. So things like that that keep happening over and over again. You can see a lot of people are feeling tired and exhausted and angry and upset, and a whole range of emotions towards these situations, but also towards the government. So I can't have the golden answer for what real change would be or how it's going to work, but lots of people are fed up, and I think there's a leadership change on the cards.
And finally, I just want to know, what do you think about Christian Porter's comments about it being a trial by media?
Yeah, I mentioned at the start, watching the press conference live, it almost felt like a deflection. You're sort of watching this press conference and you can feel the weight of it, and you can feel how really intense it is for everyone in the room, and, you know, for the family of this woman as well, having to go through that. And then just to mention things like, trial by media, or bringing up social media as sort of outing him before he was able to, et cetera, et cetera. It felt like such a deflection. The whole press conference really did feel like such a deflection of blame. And in terms of trial by media, I mean, no media outlets that I'm aware of printed his name or, he also said that no media outlet had come to him prior asking him about the allegations. He said no one has come. And then on Twitter last night, we saw an array of journalists deny that and say that they actually did contact his office for comment, so et cetera.
That was Zoe Canandis with Radio Watch. She's from Radio Adelaide, and we get in touch with her each week for what's going on across the ditch. And today we covered the Attorney General Christian Porter, who has come out as the Cabinet Minister who had rape allegations come to light about him last week.
That was Neighbourhood Watch. Ripper.
It is almost 12:45 right now, and I'm going to go into a song. It's Kids Who Love the Beat by Cal Fish. You're listening to 95 BFM. This is the Thursday Wire with Ayana.
The Wire.
I don't know, and frankly the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire. Thank you.
By the government these days. Sometimes they just need a good kick in the backside.
The Wire.
Welcome back to the Thursday Wire. It is 10 minutes to one right now. I'm Ayana and it is my first show, so I really do appreciate the text coming through. Thank you so much. One on the piece that Karunama did about the ageing population, regarding the ageing population, has there been consideration that it's the older generation that hold all the wealth in this country too, with younger generations struggling to get their foot in the door for the tax-free capital gain housing market, yet they are the ones that will be university paying for those generations later. And university fees too. Let's not forget the student loans that a lot of us have got behind us at the moment. Thank you for that text and thanks for listening. Also, thanks to Hamish. Great first show. Two thumbs up. You have a voice for radio beyond your years. Keep it up. Well, I'm actually 50, so. No, thank you so much, Hamish. Appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for listening. And is it Grizzy? You've come through with a bit of a hot take. Interesting timing of the Facebook kerfuffle when rape allegations were coming out in Australia. Yes, very interesting things happening over there at the moment. As always, thank you so much for listening. And let's conclude the show.
That was The Wire.
That is all for the Thursday Wire today. Nei te mihi kia koutou. koutou katoa. I kōrero reo mō mai ki o mō tēnei rā. A big thank you to my news producer Karanama and those who talked to us, Minister Andrew Little, Natasha Gallardo from the New Zealand Foundation, National Foundation for Deaf and Hard of Hearing. Karanama, thanks for the piece on the ageing population, and Zoe Canandis for Neighbourhood Watch. Ka hoke mai mātou Tera Wiki, thank you for listening to Fit My First Show, My First Wire. I'm pretty stoked. Stay groovy, stay informed, and I will leave you with a great song by Skeela. It is Live at the Wine Cellar, and the song is called Travelin'. You're listening to 95 BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.